Hey guys, what's going on? I'm Andy Palmer, and I am the next guest on On Screen and Beyond.
On Screen and Beyond, an inside look into the entertainment world featuring interviews with people from the movie, TV, and music industry, news on upcoming TV and DVD releases, and the rumor mill. And now, here's the host of On Screen and Beyond, Brian Zemrak.
Thank you for joining us for another edition of On Screen and Beyond. This is episode 656 of the show that keeps you updated on what's coming your way as far as upcoming new movies, remakes, sequels, and TV and movie DVD releases, as well as our interview segment with a guest from the movie, TV, or music industry. This week on Screen and Beyond, we have director Andy Palmer joining us. Now, Andy has a new comedy out from Lionsgate. It's called The Reeducation of Molly Singer. Now, it stars Britt Robertson, Wendy Malick, and Jamie Presley, and a whole great cast. So we're going to be talking about that. Andy has also directed Camp Coldbrook and the Funhouse Massacre, and he's done some other stuff too. He's an editor also, some great shows that he does. He does a lot of that too. So Andy's coming up in a few minutes right here on Screen and Beyond, so we'll find out a little bit more about the re-education of Molly Singer on Screen and Beyond. So also want to thank our listeners from around the world, and of course the United States. We have all kinds of listeners in the UK. Had some emails from you. Thank you for writing me. And also from Australia. And I will work on trying to get those people that you suggested. And thank you so much for getting those ideas to me, because it helps out. So if you have a suggestion, you can email me at feedback@onscreenandbeyond.com, and I'll see what I can do about getting that person on the show. And it can be somebody from the music world, the TV, or movies. Makes no difference to me. We'll try and see what we can do about getting those people on. So thank you very much for that. And the writer's strike is over, finally. That is a big step forward. We still have the actor's strike that is going on, but the studios have now moved on from the writers to the actors, and they're in talks. So hopefully that will all become resolved and will be, you know, finally back to normal as we can. It's going to take a while to get things geared up, of course, but hopefully that will keep things moving forward, and we'll get some great entertainment coming our way. So hope everything goes good and quick for that, for the actors, and we want to keep our eye out for that being resolved. And then I'm sure there's going to be a flood of movies and things going on, and hopefully we can get some more people here at On Screen and Beyond to talk about that. And let's see, what else do we got going on? Hope you had a great week, and I had a lot of fun this week, and we did a couple more interviews, got some more people lined up, ready to go. They're all in the can, and we'll be giving you more and more episodes of On Screen and Beyond with some great, fascinating guests. So why don't we get right into it? What do you say we get into remakes, sequels, and prequels right here on Screen and Beyond?
Please hang up and try
again. Remakes, sequels, and prequels. Well, the Pulitzer-winning novel by Herman Wouk will hit the big screen on Showtime now. It's called The Kane Mutiny Court Martial, and it's the final film that's directed by William Friedkin. And Disney is gearing up for their live-action remake of Bambi now that the writer's strike is over, so we'll see where that goes. Disney's Snow White live-action remake will arrive in theaters on March 22nd currently, and an update on Stephen King's Salem's Lot, the remake film they're going to make, and it's all filmed, and it was scheduled for to be in theaters this year, but it is still currently in limbo. There's no word why they're not releasing it, but we'll keep you updated and find out what is happening with that one. And if you saw the original film, which was actually a TV movie or a miniseries, I believe, that was great. That was a great film, but this one could be good. So we'll see what happens with that. And that is it for remakes, sequels, and prequels. Coming up next on Screen and Beyond, upcoming new movies. Upcoming new movies, Down in Dallas Town, from JFK to K2. It opens theatrically in New York City on November 17th. It's a documentary film that explores the impact today of the JFK assassination. And Argyle brings Bryce Dallas as a spy novelist whose novels start mirroring a real-life spy who's allergic to cats. Sam Rockwell and Henry Cavill also star in that film. And that's coming your way on February 2nd, so look out for that one. And that's it for upcoming new movies. Next on Screen and Beyond, well, it's movies and TV on DVD and streaming. Movies and TV on DVD and streaming October 6th on digital. You can see Strays with Will Ferrell and Jamie Foxx lending their voice. And on October 10th, it comes your way on Blu-ray and DVD. And Lifetime's A Very Merry Christmas Collections Volume 5 and 6 brings you 12 Lifetime holiday movies in one package on November 7th. Sound of Freedom, a big movie this past summer, will land on Blu-ray and DVD on November 14th and on digital November 3rd. And November 21st, you can look for Resident Evil as it comes back in a limited 6-movie 4K Ultra HD Steelbook Collection. And King of Killers hits Blu-ray and DVD on October 31st. That's it for movies and TV on DVD and streaming. Coming up next on Screen and Beyond, we're going into TV and entertainment time.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hi, this is Dean Butler, and I'm on Screen and Beyond.
TV and entertainment time. ABC has canceled Home Economics. Writer's strike comes back. They canceled the show. And Nickelodeon has renewed SpongeBob SquarePants for a 15th season. And Aerosmith has canceled all of its 2023 tour dates as Steven Tyler has suffered a fractured larynx, and shows will be rescheduled for 2024. And that's it for TV and entertainment time. Coming up next on Screen and Beyond, we have the director of the new comedy from Lionsgate that's coming out called The Reeducation of Molly Singer. It's Andy Palmer. And Andy has a great cast, he has a funny film, and it's in theaters and also on streaming. So look out for that one. Andy Palmer, next, right here on Screen and Beyond. Joining us today on Screen and Beyond is a director who has led the films Camp Colebrook and The Funhouse Massacre, among others, and his latest film is The Reeducation of Molly Singer. It's director Andy Palmer. Andy, welcome to Screen and Beyond.
What's going on? How are you?
Great. How are you?
I'm doing great. It is a beautiful day here in Portland, Oregon, and I'm looking forward to talking with you.
Yeah. Well, first off, I want to congratulate you on your new film. It's a good film. I watched it last night. And,
oh, good.
It was a fun movie. Yeah.
Oh, good. I'm so glad. I really appreciate you giving it a look-see. We love it. And I'm just excited to hash it out with you.
Now, tell me something. I got the feel of maybe an homage to the 80s type films, you know, those type films.
Yeah, I mean, you can look at, we're just audio, but if you were to see me on camera right now, I have just a smattering of nostalgia, tchotchkes on the wall and stuff like that. Yeah, I am definitely a throwback kind of guy. I love 80s, 90s comedies. Those are my jam. And you know, even in my earlier films, I may have been accused once or twice of being, a bit on the nostalgic side, painting with the nostalgia brush, as they say. And that's just my jam, and I love it. And this is one of those movies. It's just sort of a modern take on the comedies that I loved growing up.
Yeah. Well, give us, our audience, a little idea of what the re-education of Molly Singer is about.
Sure. So Molly Singer is about a young attorney who feels like college were the best days of her life. She was the queen of campus at Barnett University. Shout out to Indiana Jones, where we got the name of the college there. And she's struggling in her burgeoning law career because she goes out and parties every night. And so the night before the biggest case of her career, she goes out and parties too hard, sleeps right through the alarm, and misses the court date. So she thinks she's going to get fired. She almost gets fired, but in a twist that only celluloid could deliver, her boss's son, who goes to the exact same university, becomes the campus pariah on his first day at school. And so instead of getting fired, Molly is tasked with going back to school to basically turn her boss's son into, the campus hero as opposed to a zero.
I like the way you did some of the twists in the film. I don't want to give too much away because, I hate that when everything is given away, but you did a good job with that.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, I appreciate it. Yeah. You know, we tried to take, those sort of kind of classic comedy tropes of adult comedies, raunchy comedies and stuff like that, and then just sort of modernize it. You know, I think humor has changed. I think we as people have changed and stuff like that. And so we try to, I look at it like, I think that comedy in the past can sometimes like marginalize groups. And I think that the key to making something funny and still pushing the envelope is to make comedy all inclusive. Like everybody's in on the joke and anybody can also be the butt of the joke. So, no one is above anyone when it comes to who we're poking fun at and stuff like that. And I think if everybody's involved, then the humor works. And, I think it works. I think it works here as well.
Now the cast in here, let us know about who's in the cast. This is, I gotta admit, this is a good cast.
Oh, thank you. Yes, definitely. I always try to, the key for me, my directing is always just trying to cast properly because they will then do much of the work for you, which is good. I can sit back and be like, oh, that's hilarious. Good job, me. No, we had Britt Robertson, who she's on the Rookie Feds right now, but also has been acting since she's knee high to a duck. And I first totally fell in love with her in Tomorrowland. I just thought, who is this person that's just going toe to toe with George Clooney? It's a Saturday afternoon. I mean, she is just so talented and really brought Molly to life. Nico Santos was somebody that when we were working on retooling the script, I was like, we need a Nico Santos type, someone that's sort of lovable but snarky, and you want to hug him but you also want to slap him. And it was crazy that he got submitted, and I was, I was like, please get this guy because he's the guy we want. And then Ty Simpkins, who, had just come off The Whale, and I thought, not in a million years is this guy gonna go from working with Darren Aronofsky to, Andy Notsky. But he did. And he had a really good time. I think it was an amazing stress relief for him. It was just a totally different vibe on set, and coming off a really, really heavy Academy Academy nominated award winning drama to just having fun and making something funny, I think kind of gave him a sort of breath of fresh air in working. Wendy Malick, Jamie Presley is amazing. I love Jamie. Sierra Ramirez, I'm a huge fan of Good Trouble on Freeform, and it was amazing to get somebody like her. So yeah, it was just this kind of dream cast that all came together.
So how do you go about getting these people on? I mean, you just call them up and say, hey, Jamie, you want to be in my film?
I do. I have everybody on speed dial. No, it really came down to, we had an amazing cat. We had amazing casting directors, Shannon McCanian and Gabrielle Almagar. And Britt was the first, one of the first people we sent the script to, if not the first person we sent the script to. And then when she came on board, when you have somebody like Britt, who just kind of universally everybody loves, come on board, everybody sort of starts to pay attention to the movie, right? And so then it sort of snowballed. And, you know, Shannon was really close with Ty and Ty's family. She had cast him when he was much younger. And so that was kind of how we got the script to Ty. And then we actually had originally attached Wendy McClendon Covey from the Goldbergs and Reno 911 to play Brenda. So she was actually came on right after Britt. But because the movie we were dealing with, the tail end of COVID, when can we start shooting and stuff like that, when it's going to be safe to start shooting. And then also just, you know, as indie films go, like, okay, we got this financing we got to raise, we got to do this. And everything sort of gets pushed. Wendy had to go back to the Goldbergs. So then Jamie became one of the last people we cast because we lost Wendy last minute. But now I can't imagine anybody else playing Brenda but Jamie, because she was just so perfect. And she was so great opposite Britt. Like, their personalities were just so, they meshed so well. And so that was just a happy accident.
Now, from what you're telling me, that a lot of this is not only who you cast, but who you have casting, correct? Because,
oh, for sure.
I mean, yes. You know, it sounds like you got to get the right person to be able to make the connections to get these people.
Casting directors are just the unsung hero of a movie. Never get any credit for the amazing work that they do, the talent that they, like, I knew of Ty, but I never pictured Ty in that role because I'd never seen him in a comedy. And Shannon was just so emphatic about, you know, how talented he was and stuff like that. And brilliant. Yes, she's amazing. And Ty was perfect for the role. They have such an eye for talent. I'm surprised that, like, more casting directors don't become like directors themselves, because they see things that, you know, are miles ahead of what other people see them.
Mm-hmm. Now, you're mentioning people moving from, you know, say a casting director to a director.
Yeah.
Now, you've done similar to that, only you started out as an editor, right? Yeah. Was your goal to be an editor?
Well, no, a goal was always to be a director.
Okay.
But when I was in college and I started really getting into filmmaking, I came in like right at that DV revolution, right? Where you could buy a digital camera and you could plug a FireWire cable into your, you know, computer with a 20 gig hard drive. And you're like, this is amazing. You know, like, I can go make a movie now. So I had made a movie my senior year in college. And we shot for like every weekend, you know, it was like a short film, but we shot for like 15 weekends, you know. And then I started like learning how to edit. And I was like, oh, my God, if I was a better editor, I would be a way better director, because you start to like parse stuff down and see the way things cut together. And you're like, oh, I would save myself so much trouble if I knew how to do this better. So I went to an editing. After that, I went to an editing school, and that's how my career started. And to this day, I mean, you know, after I get done with interviews today, I'm flopping over and working on a show on the CW as an editor. So, but the goal was always to get in the director's chair, and I feel really blessed that that's kind of the trajectory I took, because when I'm on set, especially in an indie film, you just never have enough time. It's just, you know, something happens, weather, you know, the location doesn't open up on time, and inevitably your assistant director is going to come up to you and be like, hey man, we don't have enough time to get through this. And as an editor, I can very easily go, okay, cool. If we lose this, and this, we can move from this shot to this shot. We're not going to miss anything. And then that just keeps the set calm. You know, it's mm-hmm. like the set will go as the director goes. And if you as the director are running around with your hair on fire, everybody's running around with their hair on fire. So I feel really blessed that I came up in editing, because it keeps the set very chill.
Now, with the re-education of Molly Singer, did you do the editing, or were you involved with it? I'm sure.
By that same token, up till Molly, I had always edited my own films, but that was really out of economic necessity, because I had more experience than anybody we could afford to hire on the editing side. And so, but this movie we had a budget. And so I went to my buddy Tim Rush, who's edited a ton of shows with me. He did a movie with me called Collection. And that was the best experience in the world, because there's so much of Tim in this movie. There's so, like, an editor brings such a different dynamic. They see things differently, because as a director, you bring so much baggage with you to the edit room because you remember how hard every shot was to get. You remember that the dolly wasn't working that day and that you had to do this. And this is the way you had it in your head, but it might not have come out that way exactly on set. An editor doesn't bring any of that baggage. They are literally looking at the footage and going, what is the best story I can tell in it, with what I have available to me, and what can I steal to enhance it even more? And so that just brings a whole fresh perspective. And Tim, there's so many things that Tim did in this movie that I just never would have even thought of.
Yeah. Did you have to do any reshoots or anything, to add to the film or anything like that?
No reshoots, but we did run into weather at the very end. I mean, we're shooting in Atlanta, Georgia at the end of the summer. It's thunderstorm, season. Molly, when she's running through the streets late for work, we had to go and pick that up in Los Angeles. So that's our only shot of Glendale is Molly weaving in and out of traffic. But other than that, that was it. That was really the only thing on the whole script, was just a scene of her running through the city that we lost and then we had to pick up.
Wow, that's great.
Jeez. Yeah, we moved really well. We had a great team. We shot the whole movie in 20 days, 20 and a half if you count that shot of Molly running through the city.
Wow, it's amazing how you can, some people might think that sounds like a long time, but it's not. I mean, to do a film in that short of time is incredible.
Yeah, it was, we moved really quick, and there's a lot of complicated, when the more humans you have on a set, the slower everything gets. And so when you have things like these big parties and you're moving this kind of herd of background actors and stuff like that around, everything slows down. And a lot of times people don't realize is when you shoot in confined spaces, that firehouse that we had, that converted firehouse that we had, it was kind of the party pad. It's a huge house. But when you put 40 people in it and two cameras and a dolly track and this and that, your room to move becomes very, very small. And that slows everything down, And so, it was amazing. We shot that whole Boozcathlon scene, all the interiors in one night. And it was the most I'd ever been, just energy level at a 10 the entire night, because it was keeping all the background actors happy and they're at a party. And Britt was so amazing. She would get on the microphone and start singing or doing something and keeping everybody up. But also it was okay, we got to do this. We got to play this game and I need this shot of this. And it was the craziest night on set, but also I think for most people, the most fun.
Yeah.
We had a really good time with it.
What about a college campus? How did you get onto a college campus, or was this guerrilla style,
No. Yeah, no, we full permission. That would have been awesome, right? When they're like, who are these guys? No. We were really lucky that we shot on two different colleges. We shot at Kennesaw State just outside of Atlanta. And then we shot even further up the road at a small college called Reinhardt. And Reinhardt especially was... both colleges were amazing, but Reinhardt, they rolled out the red carpet for us and they were so sweet. The frat house, Stu's frat house, is actually the president of the university's house. So imagine us rolling in six trucks deep, 6 a.m. be like, well, sir, we'll take it from here. And it was just pulling things off the wall, putting our stuff on the wall. And they, I mean, for them to do that and to have a set piece like that was just incredible.
Wow, that's amazing.
This is John O'Hurley. You remember me as Jay Peterman, and I'm on Screen and Beyond.
Your editing career is also pretty amazing. I was looking at your credits, and you've done some big shows, really.
Yeah, I mean, I've been really fortunate to edit a lot of stuff, and I came up in reality editing in non-scripted, again, which I feel was a blessing in disguise because it made me such a better storyteller. It's a very different style of editing, in the fact that, you're not given a script. You're given sort of a parameter, an outline, and then you work with a story producer to craft the story, to basically write the script in the edit. And the ways that you do that, from stealing, I was literally just talking with another editor friend of mine on the show that I'm on now. I'm doing a show called F-Boy Island for the CW. And I literally was like, you know, going down the line, I'm like, okay, I need this character to give this look and stuff like that. And so you're sort of hunting through the footage, and it could be 10 minutes down the line. And honestly, she or he could be looking over at, you know, the producer talking to them or something like that. But just that look is perfect for what you need. And that's what you do in reality editing, is you just sort of beg, borrow, and steal all these moments to write the story. And then that translates into, you know, script writing. There's so many times in a movie that I've edited that I've just stolen a broken take or, you know, an in-between to sort of like create, you know, a mood.
Yeah. Well, Andy, I know we're running out of time here, so I want to finish up with the final question. When you sit back and relax, what's your favorite TV shows now and of the past, and what's your favorite movies now and of the past?
Yeah. Oh, fantastic question. Boy, that Ted Lasso, I mean, you can see I have the Believe thing. I have the you know, the blanket. Ted Lasso, I've watched the first and second season like three times. I've watched the third season once. That show, I cry almost every time. The TV series Parenthood was like, my goal is to work with like every single actor on that show. That show used to get me every single time. Such a great blend of comedy and heart. Movie-wise, you know, I've seen, my favorite movie of all time is Roxanne. I watch it probably 2-3 times a year. That's like the movie. When I learned how to screenwrite, you know, this was pre sort of like being able to pull a script offline, you know, when I was in college. Like the internet was not in its infancy, but not like I couldn't go to Drew's Scriptorama and grab any screenplay I wanted, right? That didn't exist. So I went to my library at Northern Arizona University, and they had one book on screenwriting, and it was Steve Martin's Roxanne and L.A. Story, and that's how I learned how to screenwrite. And I think by proxy, Roxanne became my favorite movie of all time.
Well, Andy, I want to thank you so much for joining us, and people should be looking out for the re-education of Molly Singer. And thank you so much for joining us.
Brian, you're the man. I appreciate it.
And a big thank you going out to Andy Palmer for joining us here at On Screen and Beyond. A lot of fun talking with him. We could see each other. You can't see him, but we could see each other. And he made a comment. He liked my, I have an on-air sign in my office where the studio is, where we have the equipment here to do the show. And he liked my sign. So he had one too, but he said he liked mine better. So anyways, hope you enjoyed that episode of On Screen and Beyond. We've got more coming your way. Got some very interesting people who are going to bring back a lot of memories to you. So in our next episode of On Screen and Beyond. So get ready for that. And if you have a suggestion, like I've always said, give me an email. You know, send it to me at feedback@onscreenandbeyond.com. Or if you are going to get our episodes, if you're on Spotify and things, you can, there's a little button that says send voice message, I think it says, or something like that. And you can go there and you can actually talk and say it, you know. And there's a possibility, if you want, you can say, don't use this on air. But there's a possibility we might use it on air if it's something we could use. That's a way to contact me, too. You can do it that way. And if you, just want to chat, go ahead. Send me an email. It's fine. So, we got a lot of things that are in the works, and you are a big part of this show, so we want to make sure that we stay connected. If you are on Spotify, we have polls every once in a while that we put up. They'll stay up there about a week and everything, so if you want to get involved with that, you can. And, usually we ask a question about, different things that are going on, and we might do some other stuff. Just trying to think of the different things we can do. I'm thinking of doing, some type of, what's your favorite film of a certain year or something, and I'd list a few, and you could pick out of those and see. I don't know. We'll come up with something, and we'll keep you informed on that. That's unfortunately, that only works if you're on Spotify. So You know, if you're getting us from Apple or Podbeam or any of those other ones, it doesn't work on that, but if you want, you can do that. So, anyways, check us out on socials. We're all there on X, Twitter, whatever, and also on Facebook and on Instagram. We are on those. So hope you'll check us out on there and like us and share. Share it so more and more people hear about On Screen and Beyond. That will get us more people here on Screen and Beyond to do interviews. Appreciate that. That's it. That's a wrap for this episode of On Screen and Beyond. So until next time, when we once again take you on screen and beyond, I'm Brian Zemirak. Take care.